The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're out of Delaware Valley. Welcome to the Pearson Coucher Show on the American Justice Radio Network. I'm your co-host, Joe Dougherty, sponsored by Weinerman Pain and Wellness, Serious Doctors for Serious Injuries. Our host, John Coucher, is in the house. How are you, John?
I am well. You, Joe?
I'm good. I'm hanging in there. Certainly a beautiful day here around the Delaware Valley. Lots to talk about. Went out to the Phillies game the other night and got the chance to with the wife watching the we were fortunate enough to be invited, and we thought we had a W, it was going to be a big celebration. We're going to have the fireworks and all, and once again,
was that the second game? That was of the series.
It was the second game, yeah. And then but the fireworks were great. You know, a lot of people stuck around for them. A lot of people, kind of, you could hear them yelling as they were walking. You know what you could do with the fireworks after the 4-3 debacle, but. Listen, that's baseball, and you never know what can happen. And I think it was Ryan Howard night. I got there late.
No, I think that was Sunday.
Oh, was that Sunday? Yeah.
Yeah, bobblehead day, too.
Listen, by the way, that was a test, John, and you clearly passed that. So, but anyway, we got a great show today. We're gonna talk. We have a great guest, Edith Pierce, in the house. How are you, Edith?
I'm great, Joe. How are you?
I'm fantastic. We're gonna talk about a lot of things, but one of the things that I'd like to get into with some of the important cases that you guys have represented clients on, where there was a lot on the line, something that was an impacting case, and in your business, both of your businesses, you're dealing with not only the livelihoods, but the physical of individuals who've either been injured in work or injured in a personal accident or something like that, or sometimes both. And so, John, if you will, just give the listeners a little reminder of obviously yourself and the firm.
Sure. So I am John Coucher, and my law firm is Pearson Coucher Law. We have offices in Philadelphia and Bethlehem, the Lehigh Valley, and the focus and sole practice area of my firm is workers' comp. All we handle is workers' compensation. We only represent workers who are injured at work. We do receive phone calls and referrals for other types of cases, car accidents, slip and falls, employment discrimination, medical malpractice, et cetera. And those are the cases that we refer to referral counsels, such as Edith.
And Edith, tell us, our listeners, about yourself and remind them about the firm.
Sure. I'm Edith Pierce. My firm's the Pierce Law Firm. We handle personal injury matters. We're dealing with all different kinds of injuries, whether it be slip and falls, auto accidents, specifically trucking accidents, construction accidents, with serious injuries to individuals is what we do.
And so there are often times when the two of your firms will work together on particular cases where there may be an injury to somebody, but it's on the job, and there may be a third party case. John, if you will, tell our listeners a little bit about how that case would come, fall in your lap, and how, you would basically take a forensic approach at looking at it, and then bring somebody like Edith in.
Yeah, the key to a work accident with a third party is really identifying who the potential third party is early on, and it's important to bring someone like Edith in early on, because there's investigation that has to occur, and it's not often that a third party is responsible for the cause of the work accident, the happening of the work accident. And if it does happen, negligence has to be proven against that potential third party. So you want third party counsel in as soon as possible, because witnesses disappear, evidence is no longer available, statements have to be taken, letters have to go out to preserve evidence, and that's where someone like Edith, getting her and her firm involved in the very beginning, can be very helpful.
And I know the both of you are top attorneys in your field, but I'm going to let you in on a term you've never heard before. Never. No chance. I'll throw everything in my wallet, which my wife gives me, $20 a week.
That's the allowance?
It's money she's not going to get again. And that term is spoliation. Never heard that before, did you?
Well, I deal with it very regularly, actually.
You do?
Yes, yes. Because, and that's what Jonathan was mentioning is one of the reasons why it's so important for us as the personal injury lawyers to get involved very early on and have our investigators get right out there. There's what is spoliation, which is comes from the word spoil. If you leave something out, it spoils, or you can something can spoil.
Sure.
So the whole idea is that you, as the lawyer for the person who was injured, we want to make sure that the defendant, the person who's responsible for the accident, doesn't spoil evidence, destroy evidence, get rid of, for instance, surveillance video, for instance, documents. There might be photos. There may be written reports. There may be prior reports, things that happened beforehand that are really important for this. They could just be invoices for work that was done or maybe wasn't done, saying why this accident happened and why somebody else other than the employer is responsible.
Sure. And in case our listeners didn't have a sense of humor, I was just kidding.
Yeah.
About the worst part.
Yeah, Joe, I wanted to add two other reasons, and I'm sure Edith can explain as well. As a workers' compensation lawyer, I know what I know, and I'm smart enough to know what I don't know.
Well, by the way, just having said that, that statement alone shows that you have intellect, because it's so important to know that.
Yeah, I know my limitations in a lot of different areas, but concerning work accidents, there are certain companies that we've come across in practice, and I think it happens a lot more often. Who have wholly owned subsidiaries and they have affiliates. And if I enter into an agreement for workers' comp for my client against an employer, 9 times out of 10, I don't care if they call the employer anything they want. But if there's a third party case and I agree that the employer is so-and-so, I could be preventing my client from having a third party case, because all of a sudden, instead of agreeing to the correct employer, I've agreed to the incorrect employer. And that prevents someone like Edith potentially from bringing a suit. The other issue is what the law says is that if the employer doesn't have workers' compensation coverage, the injured worker has the option of pursuing a claim directly against the employer for negligence. So if that's the case, if the damages are severe and if negligence is clear that the employer did something wrong, that may be a better case for Edith and her firm to handle.
So it's interesting because when somebody comes, that's why I we've talked about it many times, when there is a work injury, plus the workers are so hopefully they've never gone through something like this before. Sometimes maybe some have, but maybe it was, I hear, I got injured 10, 15 years ago, whatever that, it was. But they typically don't, they don't have this information. They don't know that. And why it's so important is you never know when you get hurt how bad it's going to be. And, we all have, by the way, unless you really don't give a hoot, most people have that. I don't want to, be at miss work. I don't want to do this. But ultimately speaking, we've had many an individual where the injury did not go away. And so having that education up front, imagine this. Imagine you're injured in work. Imagine, you have an issue. Here's an instance to give you, and even to give listeners. I was over my buddy Tim's house late last week, and Tim's about my age, early 30s. Only people in the studio know where we're going there, right? But when Tim got married, I met a buddy of his in his wedding party, an attorney. And it was a nice guy. He made a little bit of an impression on me. I saw him again at Tim's house about 6 months later. He was in his office. He was throwing a piece of paper in the trash can. It missed. He went to pick it up. He tripped, hurt his back. That was 30 some years ago. He's on his deathbed because he ruptured a disc in his back when he did that. He's down to 107 pounds. Mm. And my point is this. He's an attorney in an office, okay? He hurt his back. Now, he got surgery. He had several issues with the surgery. His surgery was done by the same surgeon, who's a reputable surgeon, that my wife got her neck done by. But they were going to Murphy's Law because he had kept getting infections, He's in that situation now, by the way. But he never would have thought. Remember when I first saw him, he's like, "That hurts. I think I'll be okay." But you never really know. I've had iron workers tell me, one particular, because I'm a union iron worker. And this is what I'd want people to know, because we have had the injured workers program. I can't tell. So this is an iron worker with signatory contractors across the board. We have 150. It's not like a SEPTA worker who only has one employer, okay, where he has to be worried about his employer and going out of work and he could lose his job and his career's over. Well, this guy could go to anybody. Like, literally, this employer is not happy with him. You know, I really feel bad, but I'm injured. He worked on this job. He was done the job. And he called me up and he's like, "I'm injured. I don't really want to cause any trouble. I don't really want to, I want to say it happened at home." Okay. I said, "Listen, you do what you got to do, but I'm telling you now, you're lying is not a good policy because you're going to stick it on your personal health care. And if they find out they're not going to cover you, what happens if you get in trouble? If you don't, you know, he didn't have the information is what I'm saying. And people never know how injured they're going to be. How often when somebody walks into your office, John, are they scared or nervous? They have absolutely no idea of the potential scope, let alone the potential of a third party case that literally could put them in a whole different stratosphere.
Yeah, it happens. And people are scared, especially when their union only places people at one employer. You gave the example of a SEPTA. And the best advice, what we tell people that we give speeches to, unions that we talk to, is you should give an accurate history to your doctor, to your supervisor, to the emergency room, because inevitably it comes back to bite you in the butt. It does, because it's very difficult to give a false history and then spin that at a later time. I mean, there are some judges that may believe it, but, you know, judges are human and, you know, everybody uses common sense and everybody says, "Well, what I do in that circumstance, you know, I would want to tell somebody exactly what happened."
And interesting enough, so Edith, you're dealing with this right down the road. John's dealing with, you know, on the front line of a work injury, right? Now you have to go investigate it, okay? After all the smoke clears, how often do you get that case? Sometimes a couple months down the road, and then you got to start from there.
Well, that does happen, and we're happy to help out as soon as somebody realizes that we need to be there. But obviously, earlier is better. But, you know, when you're bringing up the situation where there might be more than one employer on the job site, and the thing is, it's so important to be involved early on and to really do all of your investigation, because there are defenses that they can raise to that, but there are ways to beat that defense or the way to show that defense is not applicable. Like, there are reasons why someone would not be able to bring a third party claim, but there are reasons why that doesn't apply. And you need a lawyer who understands that. I mean, I've had situations where, you know, it was a job site injury, bad injury, collapse injury. And, you know, the defense was that the employer was not going to be, not only the employer, but the people that were the defendants couldn't be responsible because they were in a direct line with the employer. And we had to
dissect the whole thing.
Well, not only that, we're talking about 20 depositions later, but we finally got to the point of what we needed to do to show that wasn't applicable, that there were ways in the law around it. So it was very complicated, and it's really important to get in there early because, you know, there's always issues. Well, we don't have those documents anymore. And the earlier we get in, the harder it is for them to see that.
And by the way, that was my point for the listener. In other words, the longer you wait, the longer you try to suck it up and not do what the right thing is to protect your physicality and your long-term well-being, the more of a chance that, you know, you may, you know, be forfeiting some rights that and some potential pain and suffering, benefits that are there for you, And your family could suffer because
of it. And I think one of the things that Jonathan and I both always tell our clients is that you need to address this now, because we all hope and pray that you will get better. I mean, that is the best scenario for, I mean, we want our clients to get better. But I don't have a crystal ball. I can't tell somebody when they walk in the office whether or not they're going to be that person that gets better and is as good as new, or whether that person is the person
lawyer,
that's not going to.
It's my buddy, the lawyer.
So, yeah. So that I can't tell somebody that. So they need to be, and I tell them this, an advocate for yourself. You have to be responsible for yourself and your responsibilities to you and your family first. Let's worry about that first. Let's get you the treatment. Let's get everything documented, because you need to let everybody know what happened and how it happened.
And you're managing the pain, you know, you're managing in both cases, because you're both, you know, the healthcare. I always find it amazing when there is a work injury and there's so much, you know, so much, I don't know, not red tape, but, you know, so much that interfere, you know, so there's so much maneuvering with the work comp company and the panel doctor situation, and that in some cases that the individual's physicality gets lost in the shuffle. Like, it's almost like, and you guys got to manage both situations. And at times, and listen, I get it, you know, I go to a chiropractor for my neck just because, and he's a member of my family, for crying out loud. He's in my neighborhood, and he sends me, I can't even move my neck sometimes, okay? Because I got arthritis in it, but I don't go and do what I should do because I put work ahead of time or whatever, right? If you're injured, and I get it. Sometimes, you know, you don't feel well enough to go to make that drive, but one, you know, it goes with the other. You gotta get your treatment. So you're managing both ends of the situation, the legalities. And by the way, with my personal neck, it wasn't an injury. It was just long-term wear and tear, probably sports, but it's my own fault in many cases that I'm stuck with this situation because I didn't pay attention to it. When you're dealing with a legal situation, they go hand in hand, right?
They have to. You always want to make sure that the injured worker or any plaintiff in any case gets the best possible treatment that they can. And in workman's comp, in certain situations, we are bound by the employer's panel physician list. And, you know, even though there is a list of physicians that have different specialties and the employer directs care in certain circumstances to those specialties and occupational health facilities, what we typically find is that the employer directs to only one, and it's an occupational health facility or a specific doctor that they want the individual to see. So there are ways to get around that. We can talk about it later. We can talk about it at a different show. But, you know, to your point, it is important that the individual get the best care that they can get early on.
And a lot of times what we see is when an individual has a work injury and they're coming from the panel doctor, and, you know, and they've been told maybe they don't come to the lawyer right away because they've been told they have to go to this panel doctor. But what we see, and I know Jonathan agrees with this, is that when somebody has an injury, unless it's a very specific, I broke my hand doing this and that was it, many times there's more than one injury involved. And maybe they're being treated for what appeared immediately to be the most severe. But many times, surprisingly, the one that's the most painful at the outset is not necessarily the most severe, or the injury is going to last as long, and we really need to check out all the parts of the body.
At the end of the day, you mentioned that, you know, you don't get the injured worker sometimes until, you know, down the road, and they, you know, they go to the, for, you know, obviously they're going to panel doctor. Most of the time, obviously, most people don't know the difference. I've talked to people that are confused on a daily basis because they can't figure out why. Especially, I mean, a specific union who's a one employer union calls me up, and their employer meets the panel requirements. But these individuals, and they're afraid right from day one, and they should be. Because they're stacked up against it, and they really don't know much. They don't even want to report it, but they. Yeah, I mean, most of them do because they'll call their union rep, and their union rep will tell them exactly what they have to do. There's a collective bargaining agreement involved there, and so this is, you know, the confusing thing is, obviously, and I feel bad sometimes because they're confused And they're scared. They am I going to get in trouble? Am I going to lose my job? And when it's a third-party case, Edith, and you talk about a catastrophic injury, like you said, when it's a break, when there's no discussion, when you know, when it's on video, you would think in many cases, and I've dealt with some cases where a guy driving a bus, this happened. In fact, this was one of the most influential. We talked about influential cases at the beginning. This was one of the most influential cases that actually gave me my spirit. Guy is driving a vehicle. He blacks out. He crashes his vehicle. Now, I get the call a year and a half later. Nice guy. We just started our program. And he blacks out, and he has a seizure or whatever. He gets brain surgery, okay? He's telling me the whole story. You know, I set him up with a support system. And then I call him back because this was a year and a half. It was 2014 or 15. And so it was the end of 15 or 16 when he called. And so I'm sitting there assuming everything's okay. But I mean, you know, as far as his workers comp. And I took care of, I set up his appointments, called him back. And he said to me, I called him to let him know that he would be getting a call. And he said, there was one more thing I didn't tell you. And I said, well, what is that? And he said, and in the midst of the whole thing, I had asked him, you're obviously collecting workers' comp, right? No. No, you're not. I'm like, you're not collecting workers' compensation. What are you doing? He actually called me because his employer was not letting him go back to work. He didn't have a seizure in a year. But he was driving a bus. So they were not playing. They were not going to take a chance. He called, he initially called me because he wants to go back to work. Mm-hmm. Long story short, he says to me, there's one thing I forgot to tell you. This is in the second call. I never would have knew this. A month before his blackout, he got assaulted while driving his bus. A woman hit him with some kind of a metal object. Of course, everything's on video. The second injury and this one. He goes, you know, of course the police come. I think the lady gets arrested, whatever. They take this guy to the hospital. He gets examined. The doctor gives him the eye test. No, in other words, can, you know, the light in the eye. Go, you know, you're fine. All good. It was a month later that he blacked out. And he said to me on the phone, almost like he was thinking of it. He said, come to think of it, I got hit in the head with the same place I got my surgery. Then he said to me that the doctor was the one that said that the same panel doctor who examined him the first time, examined him the second time after his brain surgery, and they cut him loose after 3 months and said they weren't connected. At that point, he had, okay, I'm all in. Give me the ball. I don't know. I'm not even getting paid. I'm like an advocate. I don't even get paid. But that guy inspired me. At what point there? Now, and Edith, we're talking about catastrophic injuries, right?
Right. Well, head injuries are so complicated and so important to treat early on and really look into them, because it's not just, like you said, the eye test. It's not just, is there a concussion or what is the level of concussion? It's not just that. It is so complicated. There are so many additional factors that people don't even realize. When somebody calls me and they have a head injury, there's a litany of questions we ask, like, what about this? What about, are you having this kind of problem? Are you having that kind of problem? And we go through it because that helps us identify which doctors you really need to see. The person at the emergency room is determining whether or not you have a concussion. That's just the beginning. If you have a head injury, the treatment is much more expansive than that.
And John, you know, in a case like the one I just said, and this is a guy calling me a year and a half later, doesn't have a lawyer or a doc. He just, and I believe that guy is a prototypical worker who just is, he gets, goes to, into a system that doesn't, that, and he's just innocent. He's like, I guess I'm trying to get, oh, I said to him, how are you getting paid? He goes, I'm trying to get unemployment.
Yeah, that's one of those cases, Joe, that really you have to piece together. And initial medical records could be very helpful. His statement, his testimony is obviously very helpful. And, you know, what you're looking to do in a case like that is get a doctor, preferably a treating doctor, who gives you that key component opinion of causation to say, you know, I believe that after being struck on the head. He developed post-concussion syndrome or some type of traumatic brain injury, which led to a constellation of symptoms, one of which is seizures. And you have to link it together because absent that, the only other way that individual could get workman's comp is that you would argue, okay, the seizure wasn't work-related, but what happened post-seizure? Did he injure his back? Did he hit his head again? Did something happen after he blacked out to cause further injury? So you can sort of argue out of both sides of your mouth, but I think at the end of the day, you want to see what those initial medical records say, have the injured worker testify, go through his past medical history, and then things will become more clear.
But my point was that when he got hit in the head with the club, it was a metal object. She hit him. It's on video. The same doctor, you know what I mean? Like, when I asked him, and by the way, I'm an advocate, I'm not a lawyer, a doctor, I can't, so I tell him that directly. But I do ask him, as a friend, tell me what diagnostics you had for that, you know? And he told me the eye, the little light in the eye. Now, John, you're talking about, going back to his medical history. At this point, there is none because she didn't, I'm not saying there wasn't any before that, but he said to me he never had a seizure, never had ever any issues. And they did so little diagnostic testing that, literally speaking, it would be hard to trace it. Well, so they actually knocked him off workers' comp.
See, sometimes it's hard to go back, which is why we tell people really come on early, because there's neuropsychological testing that we can have done, and it can show where the deficits, the problems are, which somebody may recognize and say, I can't quite find my words. Well, that's a serious symptom of a head injury, okay, of a concussion. Sometimes they'll say, you know what, I don't understand it, but when I walk outside, like, I feel like I'm getting a headache and I have to really squint. Well, photophobia is a symptom of a head injury. And if you don't know all the questions to ask, and most people don't.
Sure.
And a lot of times 100%. They're not going to a doctor that's asking those questions. You should talk to your lawyer. Make sure you tell them the symptoms, because you want to get to the doctor that's going to ask you all the right questions to know what kind of problem you have and how expansive it is and what kind of treatment you need.
Sure.
Yeah. And Joe, to Edith's point, and we could probably have an entire show on traumatic brain injuries. The frustrating part as a claimant attorney, a claimant advocate, is we see closed head injuries all the time. And there's no diagnostic study that's going to say someone has a traumatic brain injury. It doesn't show up on an MRI, a CT scan. The only thing those studies can do is rule out really severe problems, such as a hemorrhage or bleeding in the brain. So the words from the injured worker, the way they describe things, the prompting that a doctor gives them, the questions the doctor asks about their symptoms, is critical, because the bases of these types of diagnoses are what we call subjective complaints. It's what the injured worker is expressing they are feeling. Now, sometimes they don't know, to Edith's point, they don't know how to say what they're feeling, because it's a weird, if you've never had a concussion before, it's weird. It's, I'm in a fog, or I just can't finish a sentence, or I forgot something, or I have a headache, or, I noticed that the sound is bothering me. So when a doctor such as an occupational medicine doctor says, you know what, there's nothing objective here, I think it's just a headache, you're going to get better, well, that's not necessarily what the medical standard is for these diagnoses.
What's interesting about that is that what we're trying, my point also is that the listener is, and when we do a lot of, promoting of our program or whatever, but you're talking to people who are not injured yet. And the point of a program like this is to tell people, the point you made, Edith, and I agree, I could not agree more. You need to be, you need to seek counsel. It doesn't mean you need to start a case or anything like that. You don't know, like you said, maybe they'll be better in 2 weeks. But the truth of the matter is, when you get injured and you seek counsel of a workers' compensation attorney, the reason we say to do it, and the same with a personal injury, is this: you're also looking the legal process is tied to the medical process, so you're evaluating them and you're asking questions. and you're the ones that are going to evaluate their their medical treatment situation. One thing that I think is phenomenal about really good attorneys, especially that represent injured workers or injury victims, is you know the best doctors to go to. Not just to prove their case, but to take care of them in that process. And let's just talk about the credibility of the doctor. Okay? Because a lot of people will say to me, well, I want to go to my family doctor. I went to the emergency room. And I'll say to them, well, fantastic. However, your family doctor is likely, I always succeeded by saying, listen, we all hope you'll be better in 2 weeks and going back to work. We're all on that side. Okay, we get it. We don't know. This is early in the game. The work comp, they've been out 3 days. But you need to know not only the best treating doctor, but the one that's going to, if you have to go and fight the system and somebody to do a deposition, and somebody who's going to be credible, somebody who's going to be able to, if you're still injured at that time, as an attorney who's a professional in these fields, you're looking at it, forensically that way also, to make sure that they get the best treatment and also that it's going to be able to represent them health-wise and legally. I mean, that's got to be a big part of the expertise, whereas somebody might go to their family doctor and that person's not, they don't know what they're up against in a work injury or personal injury.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple boxes you want to check whenever your client sees a doctor for a work injury from our perspective. Number one, we try to at least get somebody to a healthcare provider that we would want to see ourselves, right? We don't want to send somebody to a hack or someone with a bad bedside manner or doesn't have a good reputation. Second of all, we have to look at the case from a litigation perspective and make sure, obviously that the doctor's board certified, the doctor is deemed credible in the community. And, one of the overlooked parts is that you got to make sure the doctor will testify, because not every doctor wants to subject themselves to testimony and cross-examination. And, we've had situations where we've relied on a family doctor or perhaps a neurologist or an orthopedist that maybe isn't adept at the litigation process, and where we're going to schedule their deposition, the assistant comes on and says, hey, look, the doctor isn't willing to give testimony. And then, we're sort of up the creek until we can find a doctor who's willing to step in and take the ball first.
But then, is an examination process at that point. In other words, the patient then has to go and get examined by that doctor. That's why it's better, like you said, hopefully somebody's going to get better, but everything goes hand in hand, the legal process and medically, so you can be on top of everything right from the start.
And I always tell my clients, especially if you're in an auto accident or let's say a slip and fall, maybe it's not work-related, go to the emergency room or go to urgent care, go to your family doctor, because you can get there fast and first.
Sure.
Get in there and get diagnosed, because a lot of times people aren't really sure what's going on. And I cannot tell you, over 25 years of practice, how many people have walked, and I'm telling you, walked into my office on a broken foot. Yeah. Like, my foot still really, really hurts. It still really, really hurts. And they're hobbling along. And I'm looking at that foot and I'm saying, no, you're going straight from here. You're going to the emergency room. We'll get you set up, but you are going right now. I said, that foot's broken.
Sure.
So, and it may not be broken. It's not hanging.
Sure, right,
but,
right.
But there are broken bones. And it's so important to get early treatment, especially in certain parts of the body where the bones start healing very quickly. You want to get in. You want to get there. And I'm telling you, over 25 years, I have seen people walk in with broken hands and broken feet.
Oh,
and they
were
thinking, I think it's going to get better.
Right. Oh, people, as in human nature, It's a catch-22. We can be our own worst enemies, as we all know. We're going to have more from the Pearson Coucher Show after the break.
My friends, this is Joe Krause. You've heard me on Philadelphia Radio now for over 20 years, and I don't often endorse products or people unless they are real game changers. I want to tell you about Weinerman Pain and Wellness, located in Center City, Philadelphia. And at the end of this short personal endorsement, I want you to consider Weinerman Pain and Wellness. If you are recovering from an injury, if you or a family member has been diagnosed with a disorder that has stopped you in your tracks, or if you're like me, determined to learn about wellness while getting yourself prepared to stay healthy so you can enjoy the blessings of your family. Remember the name of this warm and caring location, Weinerman Pain and Wellness. Why should you consider Weinermann Pain and Wellness? Because they are who you expect them to be.
Weinermann Pain and Wellness, located at 100 South Broad Street, just south of City Hall. Call Weinermann Pain and Wellness at 215-988-9503. That's 215-988-9503. Call today.
At any given moment, somewhere in America, a baby is taking a first step, a developmental milestone. But for too many parents, a baby's first steps aren't just a milestone. They're a miracle. These are the parents of babies who were born prematurely or with birth defects. It's a crisis affecting more than 500,000 babies in the United States each year. You can help them by joining volunteers like you who walk in March for Babies. The money you raise funds research and local programs that help babies overcome the challenges of premature birth and birth defects. Together, our steps make stronger, healthier babies a reality for thousands of families. Sign up today at marchforbabies.org to take the steps that help make milestones and even miracles possible. Who will you march for?
All right, I've gone through all the tracks, just move through the beats. Do your thing.
All right, everyone, let's hear it for West High's own Brooke Turner, a.k.a. DJ Hook.
Scratching up my first school dance takes confidence. So we're getting into college. I've got what it takes. Okay, I went through the practice sessions. I slept good. I feel good.
We will now begin the test. Please take out your pencils.
I got this.
We're all good at something. Maybe it's breakdancing or skateboarding or video games. Whatever you're good at, you had the skills to make it happen. And those same skills will help us get to college. Visit knowhowtogo.org to learn what you should be doing right now to prepare for college. Start taking the steps at knowhowtogo.org.
I've got what it takes. So do you.
Brought to you by the American Council on Education, Lumina Foundation, and the Ad Council.
In May of 2000, Devo Karnakar skied the full descent of Mount Everest. Every day, somewhere in the world, someone base jumps off a bridge, an antenna, a building, or a mountain peak. At Mavericks, surfers brave 60-foot faces and a punishing rock bottom to ride the world's largest waves. Across suburbia, skateboarders transform curbs, stairs, swimming pools, and cement flood basins into Everests of their own making. In the old days, we called these people adventurers. Now, we call them extreme sports enthusiasts. There's a group of people who jump out of helicopters into 30-foot ocean swells, race vehicles through war zones, chase hurricanes, fly through walls of fire, and maneuver zodiacs through flash floods, all in an effort to save lives. We call these people the Air Force Reserve. The Air Force Reserve. Live the extreme.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Pierce and Coucher Show. We're here with our host, John Coucher. Our guest is Edith Pierce of the Pierce Firm. I'm Joe Dockett, your co-host, responsible by Weinermann Pain and Wellness, serious doctors with serious injuries. We're talking workers' comp, personal injury, and a lot of the little things that a worker or somebody who gets injured should know to make sure that they don't become more victim than they already are. Don't be a fool. Get in the game early and make sure you because you're protecting your physicality and your family, and that's what's really important. Having said that, we're going to talk about some cases that have impacted us along the road. I told you guys earlier about a case with a code red. We're going to probably skip that one. I think Tom Cruise was in that one, John.
You were his stunt double, right?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I remember because I just had to keep saying, you can't handle the truth for 4 days. And when I got up there, I kept messing it up. You know, the truth. So Edith, tell us, you'd mentioned there's a case that impacted you that stays with you, on a daily basis.
Well, there are a number of them, but one that stands out in my mind is a young man, literally young man, 16. He had just come to this country and he wanted to work. And he was working for a temp agency, and he did not speak English at all. And he was working with a temp agency that spoke his language. And they placed him in a manufacturing facility, which, first of all, he was too young to be there. And he was told to lie about his age.
By the way, there's a whole slew of things and full blown out shows off of that introduction.
Issues. But right. You can see how this builds. He gets placed in a facility. This facility has actually more than one manufacturing company within the same facility. And they would just at different point in times put him in different jobs, you would say, but there are different companies involved in there. And at this one time, they had him working on a machine, which was a press machine, and his hand got pulled in.
Oh,
it was a terrible crush injury, and he really lost his hand in the worst way.
Oh,
not that there's a good way,
no,
but just progressive amputations, progressive necrosis with the skin, the flesh was just dying around
because
he was so crushed. And it was his dominant hand, and he was only 16 and had just come to this country. And from my standpoint, handling the personal injury end of it, there were questions not only who was responsible for the injury, but the machine itself. Was it defective, and why was his hand even able to be pulled into it? So we had those issues to deal with. Which company could we sue? Who's the employer? Who isn't the employer? Who could we sue? So we had to sort all of that out. And one of the things I thought really said, what really affected you? And he had no mother, and he often told me that he thought of me like his mother, too.
Oh.
And, giving him guidance, giving him direction. But the one thing I have to say that really affected me permanently was I'm in depositions. We have now multiple companies, probably 10 different defendants in the room, all represented by, you name the 10 biggest law firms in the city who do defense work. They're all there. And so he has to testify with the translator, and he's explaining how he would stand at the corner and the temp agency would pick him up, and then they would take him to wherever they would take him. And one of the lawyers looked at him, very old time, very good lawyer, but looked at him and said, I don't understand why you would get into a van and not know where you're going or what you're going to be doing that day. And that really affected me because that showed that he truly didn't understand
the insensitivity.
What was going on. He didn't know. He had no basis to understand it. His whole life never had any of those experiences. And he had no basis to actually understand that this is the only way he knew that he was going to make money and be able to support himself. And he was told by his uncle who was living with that you had to get a job. The people in that room with me could not understand why that young man would get in there. And that's what really affected me, because you really have to understand not only your client and not only the injury, but where your client's coming from and be able to explain it. Because let me tell you, I took that lawyer to task, because it was so important to understand that this is his reality. It's not your reality. It's his reality on what life is and how you lead your life.
Well, let me just say this. The essence of a person is sometimes lost through insensitivity. And I say that because if you can't be compassionate, what I always say is, especially when we talk about situations like insurance and all, it doesn't sound real personal. Imagine that's your son. Just try to really imagine it. Don't listen to my words. Just actually imagine that they don't have any other, when somebody's discriminating against somebody, imagine it's your father or your mother, okay? And what it would be like if it was them. Now, not everything's cut and dry, okay?
Absolutely.
And we have immigration laws and we have all those things. And it's confusing because sometimes people take a political stance on it, right? When you're hungry, And if your child is hungry, you got to work, okay? And why would you do it? I did a show recently where they talked about the shootings in the city of Philadelphia and some of the activists, and there was a big event yesterday, and it's connected to this, where people are talking about it, and not the violence in the city is not just about drugs and stereotypical stuff. Some people are hungry. Now, look, they got a bad raw deal sometimes. Sometimes they put themselves in that situation. But let's take that kid, for example, 16 years old working. John, Do you see that kid ever? In other words, he's 16 years old. There's clearly an employment. I mean, there's clearly an employment situation. What happens when that kid walks into your office?
Well, we don't see young workers like that that often with such serious injuries. So, I mean, I think Edith, her, I mean, that case was, you know, it would be unique to me. I don't know if Edith has had experience handling very young workers like that. We haven't, thankfully. But, you know, to Edith's point, there is a human side of that that gets lost. And, you know, shame on that lawyer in Edith's case that just didn't realize it. And I am sure Edith was able to capitalize on that, and her client got an amazing recovery.
Well, when you're dealing with something like that, Edith, and you see that insensitive, and you said you laid into him, you took him to task. How'd that go?
Well, when I take someone to task, they know it.
Yeah. And you know,
that's all I can say.
Well, you know, it's funny because you know, I get the opportunity to meet, you know, Philadelphia's top attorneys under these circumstances, and it's great. But, you know, you're not here for no reason.
All of that aside, you know, it's so important in our field, I think, to really be able to connect with your clients and understand your clients. Now, you have to understand the defendants as well, because everybody, what people tend to forget is that everybody is a human. Okay, everybody's a human, and there are personalities, clearly different personalities. And I don't care what your position or of education or background in life is, those personalities cut across everything. And if you can understand an individual and their personality and then what shaped them into what they are, then you can really touch that person and reach and really understand on both sides. So I use this both front to be an advocate for my clients and also to understand where the other people are coming from, because once you understand that, it makes a big difference.
Well, certainly when you break it down like that, and that's, you know, that's an impacting statement, and it goes to a lot, and that, you know, very interesting, John. You have a client, and you see, and you could see, and I'm sure Edith, you could see, you know, where that was going. Sometimes, you know, and as you know, somebody who grew up in a city, and you know, I want to know that my attorney is willing to, you know, get some, you know, spunk, and you know, when they see that somebody's being wronged, and you know, the little guy, because neither one of you are here because you're representing the big corporations, which you could be.
No, we're not.
Obviously, but. John, when you're in that situation and you see, you know, a corporation, you know, somebody taking it, you know, business as usual, you know, it could be business as usual for them. They got a quota. They, you know, they got to go through and give a report at the end of the day. But your guy or your woman, you know, they got to go back to their family. You ever get in a situation where, you know, you're like, oh, I had enough of this particular situation. There's not enough sensitivity going on for my guy to see. They're just not a number. What happens when that happens to you?
It happens a lot, Joe. And sadly, you know, it's a business. And there are clients that understand it's a business. And there are clients that understand that they are on an assembly line. And the insurance company will get to them when they get to them. And there's a process. And we have hoops to jump through, and you know, there's court deadlines, and some clients get it, some clients don't get it, and that's where your experience, not only as a lawyer but as a counselor, part-time psychologist, part-time therapist comes into play. And you know, those are the clients that are on the ledge, and you know, it spurs other feelings. You have a client now that may be depressed, that may be suffering from an adjustment disorder because of the emotions around it.
Sure.
And it's natural. But the human side of what happens to an injured worker or any plaintiff in a traumatic incident is often lost. And when you have, I'll take the flip side. When you have an adversary, an attorney representing your opponent, who gets that, It often makes for such a wonderful result on a number of different fronts that it's worth discussing.
Well, you know, you sit there as a professional, you're both professionals. So is it sometimes when you're dealing with a situation like that, do you have to kind of get a hold of yourself and say, look, you know, I can't tackle this person right here, even though they have no sensitivity to your client, you're dealing with, okay, this is go time.
Well, when you do a deposition, a lot of times you're exposing that person for who they are and how they react. So it's about getting facts, but it's also a lot of times from my perspective in the third party case, because it's different. We're always looking towards what could be a jury trial. How will this present? How will that individual present? So we're looking at not only when I'm taking a deposition, I'm not only looking for answers to my questions and creating that box and making it so that nobody can get out of it, but also discovering the personality of that individual. You need to know if they're going to be set off. You need to know if they are truly compassionate about what happened. And sometimes, I mean, I tell you what, a lot of times people are, but that doesn't mean that the insurance company that's the one perpetuating this has the same view of it as the individual involved. And that's what you really need to look at, because many times we'll see a situation and somebody will say to me, my client will say to me, I don't understand why they're doing this. Why is this person doing this? And I have to explain, well, many times it's not that individual. That person actually feels pretty sorry for what happened.
It's not personal.
It's the insurance company that is perpetuating this. And a lot of times you have to explain that it's not necessarily the individual. I know John runs into that with employers. So
we do all the time. And, you know, one of the frustrating things for us is when our adversary takes it personally. And it's to the point where sometimes we say, look, it's not your money. It's not coming out of your pocket. What is the issue here?
Right.
So look, calmer heads prevail and most of the cases do resolve. And the ones that don't for the right reason.
Right. I mean, that's why there's pros like you guys, because I'd be losing my, you know what? You know, I know it's sometimes, but
every once in a while you need to.
By the way, Edith, if you would, we have a few minutes left here, but I'd like you to, give out your information if anybody wants to get in touch with you.
Sure. I'm Edith Pierce, The Pierce Law Firm, T-H-E, the is important. It's www.thepiercelawfirm, P-E-A-R-C-E.com. We're in Center City and also in Cherry Hill, 215-557-8686. Call us anytime.
John Coucher.
Thank you, Joe. John Coucher, Pearson Coucher Law, 2501. That's our suite number, 1650 Arch Street in Philadelphia. And then we have an office in the Lehigh Valley in Bethlehem. We focus on workers' compensation for the injured workers, 215-627-0700, or on the web, PearsonCoucherLaw.com.
You know, it's great information today. I mean, obviously, it's important. We got about 5 minutes left, and we've covered everything I wanted to cover today. So, as attorneys, sometimes I like to have a little bit of fun, and we have we'll talk about . So, you know, you have hectic days. Obviously, you know, you guys work, so there's no out of pocket costs. So when somebody comes into your office and there's a case, or you're vetting that case, doesn't cost anything for the consultation, doesn't cost anything if you're investing in the case. So that's important. But when the day's done, it's the weekend, you're going to say to me, well, you know, we're meeting clients during the day and we're working at home afterwards, but let's have a little bit of fun. We talked a little sports, and Edith, what do you like to do for fun? What are your hobbies?
Loaded question.
What are your hobbies?
In the summer, I'm a shore girl.
Sure.
I love the
shore.
You
like the water?
I do. I love the beach. I love the water. I'm a shore girl. I've spent a lot of time down there over the years, and I've always enjoyed that. So.
And you need, I mean, obviously, what shore?
Ocean City right now.
Oh, how about that?
I kind of. The South Jersey shores, you know, Avalon, Stone Harbor, is very, very dear to my heart.
That's
as well.
Awesome. John? So.
Yeah, I spent a lot of time down the shore, and sadly, my wife does not like the beach. So, you know, weekends are great in this area because when everybody goes to the shore, it's quiet and you can get reservations easily.
You can.
You know, nothing is crowded. And the summer for us, for my family, is nice because I have three kids. Two are in college and I still have one middle school age child.
Really?
Who goes to overnight camp. So in the summer, the big kids, we call them, come back and, you know, we never know who's coming or going, but it's one of the rare times during the year that my wife and I, we get a weekend to ourselves. There's no, you know, going to hockey. There's no going to this activity, no flying to see somebody at parents' weekend. So for us, it's a little bit more subdued. My heart is at the shore, but unfortunately, you know, my life is here on the weekends.
No, I get it. And I love the shore. I've always loved it. The traffic is what crushes me. My ideal, and I'm working 24/7, but I also love the shore. Edith, tell us something about yourself. This is like a game show that somebody might not know.
Tell me something that somebody John, may you're getting not this one know next about
yeah,
me.
Yeah, I'm thinking.
I have the unique ability of having memorized pretty much every lyric to every song from the 80s.
Really? who's your favorite band in the 80s?
Oh, there's so many of them. I mean, I cut across I'm all an 80s boards, guy but too. Listen, Bon Jovi is dear and near to my heart, always will be. But everything from pop to rock to heavy metal, I happen to be very large, great music fan, and I do have that ability.
That's awesome, so. John.
I'll go in the hobby topic. I'm an avid gardener, so on weekends my hands are dirty. I probably still have dirt under my nails from the weekend. I've got this old pair of gloves with holes in them. I wear a floppy hat and, you know, my kids see me, they make fun of me, but you know, it's my solitude.
Well, it's interesting because my wife, we have a little teeny garden out back and we just learned it, and she'll call me when the strawberries are ready. They've been in there for a month and a half and they're an inch wide. Right. And I'm like, Elaine, it's got to be a year before that even looks resembles a strawberry. Listen, I want to thank our listeners for joining us on the Pearson Coucher Show. I want to thank John Coucher for being a great host. I want to thank our guest, Edith Pierce, another awesome show. And I want to thank our host, Weinman Pain and Wellness Serious Doctors for Serious Injuries. For John Coucher, I'm Joe Doherty. You've listened to the Pearson Coucher Show. We'll talk to you next month.